And you're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, where the time is 11 o'clock. And we return now, Taking Aim, with Ralph Shulman and Maya Shoon.
Well, glad to be back with all you folks in New York, and those of you who are listening to us via the Internet, people in Oregon, people in Norway, and people in Cuba, everywhere. We hope there are more people, so please let everyone know that you can hear us at www.wbai.org. And this hour, we want to speak about something that is not talked about that much anymore, and that is the relationship of the U.S. and Israel in connection with the arms industry and also the intelligence, the undermining of the revolutionary struggles, the righteous struggles of people throughout the world. We went through some of the books in our library. This is something that is so well documented, and yet you don't see it on the pages of the New York Times and the Washington Post, particularly at this moment and in the descriptions of what is motivating President Bush in his relationship to Ariel Sharon and what is motivating Colin Powell. And some of these books are written by Andrew and Leslie Coburn. One's called Dangerous Liaison, The Inside Story of the U.S.-Israeli Covert Relationship. There's by Dan Raviv and Yossi Melman, two Israeli journalists, Friends Indeed, Inside the U.S.-Israeli Alliance. A very important book is written by a professor in Israel, Benjamin Bet Halami, and that's called The Israeli Connection, Who Israel Arms and Why. And then a Mossad agent, Victor Ostrovsky, wrote two books that are very revealing, called By Way of Deception and The Other Side of Deception. That's the inside operations of the Mossad, things in which he was involved. And then there's Prophets of War by Ari Ben-Menash. These are just a few of the books that are available that give you a lot of information about the Israel's role undermining the struggles of people throughout the world and the close connection. As Leslie and Andrew Coburn, and Andrew Coburn is the brother of Alex Coburn, isn't that right, Ralph?
Yes.
As they write, quote, if the U.S. Congress balked at arming an unwholesome dictator, it was useful to have a friend across the sea who could take on the task without problems or scruples. And in fact, the relationship of Israel to undermining struggles goes way back to the beginning of the formation of the Zionist state in 1954. Israel provided the French with intelligence operation against the Algerian Revolution. And Israel also developed a long relationship with French in terms of developing its arms industry before it had its close connection with the United States, because at first the United States was hesitant, and then it launched in full steam ahead with a very close relationship, where it's hard to even separate the Israeli arms industry and the U.S. arms industry. But in 1954, Israel provided the French with intelligence in exchange for covert arms sales. And this was organized by none other than Shimon Peres, who at the time was David Ben-Gurion's, the prime minister's assistant, and his job was to build up Israel's weapons arsenal. Now, Peres negotiated directly with the French Minister of Defense and with other senior French officials. And as a result of this, the French diverted NATO airplanes. Yes, the NATO airplanes for Europe, they diverted these planes to Israel, and all of this was done with the knowledge of the CIA. So as a result of this, between 1957 and 1960, Israel worked with the French Dassault Corporation, which builds the Mirage bomber, And they Israeli engineers worked with the French to enable the Mirage to carry nuclear weapons. And where were the nuclear French French nuclear tests done? No other place than in Algeria in the Sahara. And the Israelis were right there alongside the French to observe these tests. So as I said, Israel played an insidious role in trying to prevent the Algerian revolution.
Actually, Maya, the role of the Mossad in Africa is the indispensable intelligence and death squad and hit squad and special forces element that sustained South Africa, that sustained the Portuguese control of Angola and Mozambique, that maintained the attacks on the population that killed literally millions of people, a million people in Mozambique and close to 2 million people in Angola. The Mossad was indispensable to these counter-revolutionary operations. And in a very important article in the London Sunday Times on April 15th, 1984, called Strangers and Brothers, the Unlikely Alliance Between Israel and South Africa, there's a very important documentation of just what that alliance represented. Because as we've documented in the Hidden History of Zionism, the settler population, the Afrikaner population in South Africa was linked to the colonial occupation of Palestine financially and militarily through the formation of banks and through joint operations. This goes back to literally to the late 19th century. But in 1917, General Smuts had established a close relationship with Chaim Weizmann, and it was General Smuts who was instrumental in bringing the Balfour Declaration into play in 1917. That relationship between the South African settlers and the Zionist state had been sustained right up through the existence of the apartheid regime. South Africa supplied Israel with money and arms in all four of its wars. In 1967, the Versta government allowed the Jews to transfer millions of dollars to Israel. South African Jews were fighting to keep essential services operating, and arms and aircraft were shipped from South Africa. But it's not just a question of South African Jews. It was the South African apartheid state itself, which was linked intimately with the Mossad and with the Zionist state itself. The International Monetary Fund has documented this, trade in diamonds and military equipment, military sales. Israel was the largest trading partner of South Africa. The cutting and polishing of diamonds, one of the first industries established in Israel, and the Oppenheimer family, who controlled De Beers, were in control, as they still are, of the diamond industry in South Africa. We've often said you can integrate the beaches of Durban, but as long as Harry Oppenheimer owns the mines, Africans are going to live in shanty towns and in poverty with over 60% unemployment, as they do indeed today in South Africa. But the South African relationship to the Zionist state and the role of the Mossad in conjunction with the Baas, the South African secret police, was absolutely decisive during the boycott that was being attempted by various countries. It was Israel that maintained the operations of the South African military and its economy. 2,700 Israeli manufactured products were permitted free entry in the United States. These were pass-throughs for South African goods. Semi-processed iron and steel was shipped from South Africa to Israel, finished at the Iskor factory outside of Tel Aviv, and then shipped on to Europe and America with the stamp made in Israel. The Iskor family itself was owned by Kor Industries of Israel and by the South African Steel Corporation. 51% by Kor, 49% of the South African Steel Corporation. And Kor Industries was in turn owned by Histadrut, which is Israel's equivalent of the British Trade Union Congress, as the Sunday Times recounts. By 1963, the UN arms embargo in South Africa was totally circumvented by Israel and South Africa's military and industrial relationships. For over 20 years, South Africa was provided with foreign exchange and a large and cheap manufacturing capability by the Israelis. And Israeli officers in South Africa trained soldiers, sailors, and airmen. South Africans were based in Israel at the port of Haifa. They trained on equipment that had been purchased by the Pretoria government. And as the article continues, Israel's intelligence on the African continent was far superior to South Africa's. The Mossad trained the secret services of Ghana, Uganda, and Zaire, the article continues. It supplied arms and trained the armed forces of the Ivory Coast, the Central African Republic, of Dahomey, of Cameroon, of Senegal, of Togo, of Tanzania, of Ethiopia, of Sierra Leone, of Somalia, of Mauritania, and Nigeria. The Mossad maintaining these regimes. The Mossad controlling their military. The Mossad doing this in conjunction with the South African state. And from the beginning of the struggle in Namibia, as the article continues, Israeli counter-terrorist experts trained the South African army and police and went into all of their operations against the liberation movement in Namibia and in Southwest Africa. Indeed, this was the maintained relationship, as the article describes. Israel's success encouraged South Africa to invade Angola at the beginning of the year, a remarkable successful armed assault, combined with continuing the campaign of destabilization that had been initiated in Mozambique, Israel taking the prominent role in setting up the border policing units of the South Africans. Israel security specialists touring the border, this was not a question of goodwill. Millions of dollars in orders were placed with Israeli firms, Israeli night sites, microwave protection, detention systems, electronic fences, barbed wire, and anti-personnel mines. The detention camps sustained by the Israeli technology for the South Africans. The measure in blood, in African blood, millions of lives, as the article continues.
Ralph, it's none other than Henry Kissinger who negotiated the payment through a $14 million CIA program that allowed for the shipping of arms and fuel to the South African Defense Forces for the specific purpose of carrying out the invasion of Angola. Also, Ralph talked about the Israeli Mossad training the South African Intelligence Service. This they cooperated closely with the South African National Intelligence Service, which was known first as the BOS. And the Israel Internal Security Service, the Shabak, maintained a permanent mission in South Africa. And according to Leslie Coburn and Andrew Coburn, the Shabak carried out some of their work disguised as foreign television crews. And they went in with the security forces into the black townships. Now, the South African security forces included hundreds of police officers, and they were not only trained by the Israelis in South Africa, but they received their training in Israel. Even the man known as the Beast of Soweto was an honored guest in Jerusalem. Brigadier Rui Roos Swampoel earned the title for his ruthless treatment of black rioters in 1976. The Beast had also acted as chief interrogator in the 1965 Rivonia trial, which put African National Congress leader Nelson Mandela in prison.
By the way, the capture of Nelson Mandela was arranged through the good offices of the Mossad and the Central Intelligence Agency.
And the electrified wall that Ralph was talking about, as well as a carpet of electronic sensors, was built by Israeli technicians. Radar was supplied. Minefields were erected, much as Israel erected along its border with Lebanon.
And this article in the Sunday Times described how to assist South Africa, that is to say the apartheid regime of South Africa, to take advantage of the Israeli electronic products. Israeli technicians from the three main electronics companies of Israel, Tadiran, Abit, and Tal, combined to help South Africa design and build its own electronics manufacturing capability. So successful was this that South Africa was then able to produce articles for export, including surveillance systems and military field telephones and radios. It was Israel who supplied South Africa with the Scout remotely piloted vehicle, a model aircraft crammed with electronics and cameras, which South Africa deployed throughout Mozambique and Angola. It was Israel that had the joint venture between Rotaflight Helicopters of Cape Town and Shemarit Masok of Israel for the Scorpion helicopter that was used with devastating effect on villages throughout Mozambique and throughout the Southern African struggle for liberation.
And some of the airplanes that were used by the South Africa, ones, as Ralph was talking, were the Israeli Kfar II jet fighter. And it was powered by none other than an American J-79 engine. Because what happened over the years is that Israel and the United States supply parts to each other so that the planes and the arms and the missiles may be manufactured in Israel with U.S. parts or manufactured in the United States with with Israeli parts. There is a cooperative relationship that has been established, and that's why a number of the IAI, that's the South African Army, weaponry were U.S. parts built in Israel with U.S. financing.
And by the way, all of these military operations were accompanied by covert operations, that is to say, assassination of African leaders, assassination of villagers, assassination of students and of trade unionists and of activists. What do you think they were called by the South Africans and the Israelis at the time? They were called terrorists, brothers and sisters. Under the rubric of fighting terrorism, the infrastructure of the African peoples of Mozambique and of Angola and of Zimbabwe and of Zambia were under continuous assault. South Africa then invested in the Israeli fighters, the Lavi and the Lion, the most significant joint venture of the state up to the time. And in 1976, South Africa purchased the Reshef-class patrol boats and manufactured at the Sandburg Astral Shipyard joint Israeli South African naval operations. The Gabriel missile employed by the Reshef was manufactured under license to South Africa, while its armaments were supplied by the Italian company Otomilara. So the article and the documentation is expansive. This is but the tip of the iceberg. But as it describes, quote, in an extraordinary example of international cooperation, the Israelis, the CIA, the Pentagon, and the State Department are united in a secret year-long effort to ship illegally the artillery and technology for manufacture in South Africa in defiance of U.S. arms export laws and U.N. embargoes. The artillery left the United States with frightening ease, filling the large hole in South Africa's armory through the good offices of the Mossad and of Israel. From Israel and South Africa's point of view, the article continues, the development of a joint arms industry was an essential one for both regimes, for both countries. Since the 1973 Arab-Israeli War, both the CIA French intelligence services, in separate studies, concluded that Israel's nuclear arsenal was shared with South Africa. That is to say, the Israelis and the South Africa shared their nuclear capability and developed it together, menacing the peoples of the Middle East and the peoples of Africa simultaneously. Like the lips to the teeth is the relationship between the apartheid regime of South Africa and the apartheid regime of Israel. And that is what accounts for Raphael Eitan when he spoke at the University of Tel Aviv in 1987. And he said, we are like the white minority in South Africa. In a guest lecture in the School of Law at the University of Tel Aviv, he addressed himself to the what he called incidents in the occupied territories and the Arab sector. He said, I don't understand the comparison between us and South Africa. What is similar with us and with them is that both we and they need to act so they don't rule over us. Whoever says they are persecuting blacks in South Africa is lying. Blacks there want to rule over the whites, just as the Arabs here want to rule over us. And we, like the white minority in South Africa, will act to prevent this. I was at the diamond mines there, and I saw what excellent conditions the black workers have. So there are separate elevators for whites and blacks. So what? That's how they want it. Added MK Itan, one has to enter a few houses of leaders and send them up to Lebanon when they begin riots. One has to put a member of family on duty in the street and say, if one stone is thrown, we're taking you straight to Lebanon, you and your daughter and your grandmother, all of you to Lebanon. That's how they handle it in South Africa. Itan did not skip over the transfer idea. He said, Kahan speaks of the expulsion of Arabs. Those who expelled Arabs are those who are today in the labor lineman camps. Hundreds of thousands of them were expelled. And then no one said anything. This is what we have to do. That's Raphael Itan, at the time, the head of the armed forces in Israel.
And in other parts of Africa, the relationship of Israel and Ethiopia. Israel trained the secret police for Emperor Haile Selassie and intervened three times when there were coup attempts against him. And how did they operate, aside from directly training the secret police? At that time, this is before the Great Famine, Ethiopia was a beef exporter. And one of the most successful companies in Ethiopia was a Mossad-owned company, a Mossad proprietary company called Inkota. And what Israel did is when they needed to send somebody throughout the Arab countries, what they would do this, by having them act as an Inkota employee. And in 1990, Israel shipped cluster bombs to prevent the rebellion in Ethiopia. In Sudan, Israel also intervened, coordinating with the CIA. And in Uganda, Israel sided with Idi Amin. At the time, before he staged the coup, when President Dobrokhtu was nationalizing the Western-owned companies. And the Idi Amin had been trained by the CIA and all his forces at the International Police Academy, at the so-called School for Torture in Georgetown, Washington, by the CIA.
His relationship to the CIA, Maya, was after Idi Amin had been trained by the Mossad and Israeli intelligence and armed forces as well. He was an operative of both.
That's right. Idi Amin was the Israelis noticed very early that Idi Amin was going to be their man, and they had a relationship with him even before the CIA came on board. So then we go to Chad. In 1992, a joint U.S.-Israeli operation installed Hissène Habré in power in Chad, and the Israelis trained his secret police, and his bodyguards were Israelis and former U.S. Marines.
Throughout Africa.
And so this is going on throughout Africa. I talked before about the relationship between Israel and the United States as far as the arms industry. And this was in December of 1970 that it was actually encoded, and it's called the Master Defense Development Data Exchange Agreement. And it enables Israel to get technical information from which it can manufacture military technology that's been developed in the U.S., and then a year later it was expanded. So in 1971 it was expanded so that U.S.-designed military equipment can be manufactured in Israel. Ralph, did you have more about Africa? Because otherwise we have a lot to say about Latin America and in Colombia, in Nicaragua, in Panama. in El Salvador. You name the country of Latin America and you see the Mossad at work.
No, the Mossad has maintained the most retrograde regimes in Liberia and in Sierra Leone. In fact, the Mossad has maintained the mafia-like operations that run the, and control the diamonds while the population is massacred. Mossad and the CIA were involved as well in the circumstances of the downing of the plane with the Hutu and leaders and the Tutsi leaders. The contrivance of the massacres in Rwanda and Burundi have an intelligence hand in it. The Mossad is implicated in the operations of the Central African Republic's regime. They have maintained virtual control over the government in Kenya from the moment that Jomo Kenyatta held office without power. And the documentation about their role in Kenya is particularly evocative because you will remember that Malcolm X was in Nairobi to meet with Pio Gama da Pinto when they were discussing the struggle in Congo, the struggle for Southern Africa. Pio Gama da Pinto was a lawyer who was one of the organizers of the Kenya Africa Union. And the publication that he edited called Pan-Africa was, articulating the role of the Israelis and of the South Africans of the CIA in supporting the most repressive regimes. The day that Malcolm X was gunned down and assassinated in New York was the day that Pio Gama da Pinto was murdered in Nairobi, the very day. And the Minister of Defense Mungai involved was a Mossad-trained figure, and his police apparatus were Mossad-controlled. The hand of the CIA, the hand of Mossad, in murder of African-American leaders, in murder of the liberation fighters and the anti-colonial struggle, the people whose militants who were struggling in Africa, is the nature and character and task of the Zionist colonial settler apparatus.
And you will recall we did a whole an entire program devoted to the Anti-Defamation League of the B'nai B'rith and information that came out through exposure was that the ADL in California was secretly spying on anti-apartheid groups as well as trade unions and other individuals, thousands and thousands of individuals, including Ralph, and sending the information to the apartheid regime in South Africa. Excuse me, the person who was spying for the ADL also was spying for the South African government.
By the way, I would point our readers to an instructive article as recently as March 31st, about 2 weeks ago, in the New York Times by Howard French. Old Files, a New Story of the U.S. Role in the Angolan War. And what this article documents is that it was the United States and the CIA and the Mossad that were intervening in Angola to destroy the National Liberation Government in Angola. And that, as the article describes, this, of course, antedated, preceded, the Cuban support for the African government in of Angola, and the United States had been supporting Savimbi's UNITA along with the Mossad as a keystone of imperial policy in the region. The documentation on that is extensive, but it's instructive to note that on March 31st, the New York Times revisited that relationship with documents which are only now coming officially to light.
Ralph, did you give the title? That was an interesting title. It says, From Old Files, a New Story in the U.S. Role in the Angolan War. Now, should we move on to Latin America?
Maya, actually, before we do that, I think we should just take a moment to discuss, and this is to an article in the New Democrat of February 27th, 2002, the United Nations arms expert, Johan Pelleman, detailing the trail of arms smuggling in West Africa and the weapons smuggling rings around Africa involving the notorious arms dealer Victor Boot with the Liberian authorities and the process through which Liberia and Sierra Leone have been martyred, their population subjected to wholesale slaughter by militia that mutilate people, as the press has been recounting. But here we see that this is a CIA and Mossad operation. In fact, not merely is the CIA and Mossad using diamonds for gain and devastating West Africa, but they are linked to the mafia of the former Soviet Union. Ukrainian mafia member Leonid Mini, deeply involved in these operations, Africa's main arms trafficker. And the article documents that the tragedies that have unfolded in Sierra Leone, the civil war, entire militias financed by money laundering operations based upon diamond smuggling, Mossad and CIA. Quote, Congo is the gold mine for warlords. There are Angolan and Zimbabwe mercenary armies and rebels in the east supported by Ugandan and Rwandan troops. There are reports of rebellions where the Rwandans are deploying allies of the Hutu militia. But this is not only a war. It is organized crime where a state has vanished, where local warlords levy taxes at gunpoint. And what they're describing here is an operation run by what? By the Mossad. In Sierra Leone, the article continues, the diamond-related riches have putrefied society. Corruption is the rule. In the 1980s, the state became virtually bankrupt. At that time, Scipio Finance, the Israeli company and a Mossad pass-through, took on Sierra Leone's economic obligations in exchange for diamond concessions. This was an unprecedented situation, the article continues. They have taken over a sovereign state. Yes, failed states, the article says, such as Sierra Leone, no longer seem an issue of concern. It is a fascinating snake nest. In the 1980s, Kalmanovich, an Israeli, obtained exclusive contract for the Sierra Leonean diamond trade. The entire leadership of the Russian mafia now settled down in Freetown. Rachmiel Brandwein, arrested in Belgium for gold smuggling, Boris Neyfeld, and Marat Balagula, the Russian godfathers from Brooklyn, were working under Kalmanovich, the jack of all trades, who worked for the Mossad. A Mossad operation, the devastation of Africa. That is the nature of the Israeli state.
You're listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoen
and Maya Schoen on WBAI New York 99.5 FM listener-sponsored radio and on the Internet at www.wbai.org. We're going to be in New York. We'd love to have you come see us. It's an event sponsored by Alumbe Brass of the Patrice Lumumba Coalition, who has also the long-standing WBAI program, Africa Kaleidoscope, on Thursday nights. Please check it out. And we'll be there for Taking Aim, and the subject is the struggle for land in the struggle for self-determination and land of the Palestinian people and throughout Africa.
And just to finish up, Maya, excuse me,
Let's say it's going to be at a Byra Demsay at 127 West 127th Street. That's near Malcolm X Boulevard, and it starts at 6 p.m.
The Daily Mail and The Guardian in London. This is February 18th, 1999. CIA and Mossad involved in Ocalan capture. Kenya sources have revealed that the CIA and the Mossad were involved in snatching Kurdish leader Abdullah Ocalan from Nairobi. The article details the methods through which the U.S. and Israel, the CIA and the Mossad, induced the Kenyan authorities to arrest and to capture the leader of the Kurdish struggle for self-determination and his transfer to the Turkish regime. The role of the Mossad in Kenya has maintained the land, the White Highlands, in settler hands to this very day. That is the character, again, of the Mossad's role in Africa, and we're going to now discuss its role in Central America and in South Africa, Latin America.
Well, the role of the Israel, the relationship in Latin America, predates the formation of the State of Israel. And this was new information to me and very important. And that is the relationship between the Jewish Irgun, the Stern, the Lehi, the groups we're talking about responsible for the massacres such as the Deir Yassin. Where did they get their weapons? They weren't getting it from Britain. They were fighting against Britain. In fact, they got their weapons, the Haganah, turned to the Somoza dynasty, General Anastasio Somoza Garcia. This is 9 years before the formation of the State of Israel. And he had been set up by the United States, controlling the National Guard in Nicaragua. And as a deception, he secretly shipped arms to Palestine, and the arms, they said, were going to Nicaragua, but in fact, the arms were going to Palestine. And this flowered into a very long-lasting relationship. Nicaragua issued passports for the Haganah agents, and as well as smuggling arms to them. And this was continued again by Somoza Jr., who had a very close relationship with the Israelis. And the Israelis, there were $250 million of the arms that went in the last month to Somoza to use against the people of Nicaragua in their struggle for control over their own country, and $250 million of arms was bought by Somoza from the State of Israel, and that's 98% of the arms that went into Nicaragua, and that's a lot of armament to use against the Sandinistas, and that came from Israel.
Now, actually, you see, from Argentina to Uruguay, to Paraguay, to Brazil, to Bolivia, to Peru, to Colombia, to Venezuela, to Panama, to Nicaragua and El Salvador, and to Guatemala and Honduras, the death squads of the right-wing regimes of the military goons trained by the Israelis. On Monday, July 11, 1988, Uri Don, the Middle East correspondent of the New York Post, ran an article called "Israel is the Power Behind Noriega." And it says, legendary Israel spy, an anti-terrorist fighter, is the brains and brawn behind Panama's military strongman, General Manuel Antonio Noriega. Mike Hirari, the top commander of Israel's Mossad intelligence services during a 30-year career, is the man responsible for Noriega's maintaining power despite his drug trafficking. During a week-long post-investigation in Panama and Costa Rica, knowledgeable Israeli and Central Intelligence Agency sources disclosed that Harari provides Noriega with sophisticated Israeli-made eavesdropping and security equipment installed by Israeli experts that spies on political opponents, organized Noriega's acquisition of advanced military arms, rebuilt his army into a major fighting force, placed Noriega's wealth in secret Swiss bank accounts, recruited a cadre of crack Uzi-toting Israeli military vet weapons as Noriega's personal security detail, get a piece of the action, up to 60%, from Israeli business firms operating in Panama. The money split with Noriega. We call Hirari Mr. 60%. because he gets that much of any deal that he makes. Officials of, this is the article continuing, officials of a major Jewish organization conducted a private mission here were told flatly that after Noriega, Mike Harari is the man most hated in Panama. That is not the only arena. And by the way, Harari's intelligence career began in the first days of the Jewish state when he served as the elite Palmach strike force commander of special units, recruited into the Mossad, where he rose into the ranks. This is a hired killer, the Mossad operative, running the death squads and the money laundering and the drug smuggling of the Noriega regime, and his hand shown and felt all over Latin America at the time. His hand felt in the Medellin drug cartel. Israeli and Panamanian financial sources say that Harari provided the means for laundering their profits in Swiss and other foreign banks through the instruments of the Mossad, and then used the funds for arms purchases. Noriega, by the way, owned two palatial homes in Israel, including one in the seaside city of Caesarea. Now, there you have it. And by the way, Harari was at posh receptions with the guests such as Foreign Minister Shimon Peres and former Foreign Minister Abba Iban, this article in the New York Post.
Well, it was worth a lot of money to Israel. There was $500 million worth of arms arranged by Harari in the 1980s, at least $100 million worth of rifles, machine guns, explosives, and advanced communications equipment. And this was done through the it was all approved by the Israeli defense apparatus, the Israeli Defense Forces, everything in Israel that is done through these arms shipments goes through official approval. Often Israel denies, says that these are rogue operations or private businessmen, but in fact it has been in interviews that were done by Leslie and Andrew Coburn with these specific arms dealers, they say time and time again that all this has been approved. So some of these companies are set up jointly in the United States. One is Commodore Aviation, which is a Miami subsidiary of the government-owned Israel Aircraft Industries, and there are others. And talking about Harari, ABC News had revealed that for financing arms purchases, aside from $14 million in drug money that Oliver North mentioned, the Harari operation was, quote, launched in the spring of 1983 at Washington's request with at least $20 million of Israeli government money, which was later reimbursed from the United States, for covert operations to go to El Salvador, to El Salvador, and also bound for the Contras to be used against the Sandinistas. And the Israelis purchased weapons from Poland and Czechoslovakia and secretly shipped them from Yugoslavia to Bolivia and then to Panama, and then, as we said, from Panama to Costa Rica, El Salvador, and then on to the Contras. And they used the Poland, Czechoslovakia, and the Israelis had arrangements with China through the United States so that it was Russian-type weapons that were being shipped, so that it wouldn't have the exact stamp of the U.S. government on it. As we said, the U.S., the Mossad, and the CIA work closely, and the CIA is always turning to the Mossad when, for instance, U.S. Congress says the United States must leave its operations, be it in Nicaragua or in Panama, and instead the Mossad steps in.
We're talking here, brothers and sisters, about an international murder incorporated, the death squads, the sustaining of these butcher regimes, the task of the Mossad and the Central Intelligence Agency.
And we're starting today. We're going to have to continue next week with the role of the Mossad. And so we will go on what we start today. No, we still have time, Ralph, but I know that we're not going to finish because we have a lot to say about particularly the death squads in Guatemala, where tens of thousands of people were murdered through the training of the Israeli government and with arms supply. And also, everybody I know is really would like to know more about the what went on with the Contras and also in El Salvador, because it is through the Mossad operations, particularly in Colombia, that trade unionists, as well as those involved in the direct guerrilla movements, have been assassinated. And all these paramilitary death squads, as well as the official armed services of these countries, are trained and armed.
And who do you think targeted Chavez in Venezuela? Who do you think has worked with the traditional army and intelligence units in Venezuela, but the CIA and the Mossad? We will detail that as well.
It has been documented that Israel has instructed high-ranking officers from 12 Latin American countries, and 17 Israeli arms firms are operating in the region.
Israel is a paradise for money launderers. Yedi Aharonot, April 27, 1997, an in-depth article by Sever Plotzker, the translation by Israel Shahak, the distinguished chairman of the Israeli Commission for Human Rights. And I quote, "Only in Israel can a person enter a bank with a suitcase containing millions of dollars, deposit the money without disclosing its source. The result, illicit capital coming abroad flows into Israeli banks, over $45 billion this year. Laundered money from illicit deals within Israel. No competent estimates regarding dimensions of the illegal economy run by the Mossad for the past 10 years. According to estimates made in 1983, 15% of the Israeli gross national product was not reported to the tax authorities. It was in the black. Is it still 15%? It is indeed larger than that. Of the 100 billion shekels of the Israeli budget last year, $30 billion were part of the black economy, reaching $45 billion. Who are the principal tax evaders, the article asks? Those in office. Those associated with the intelligence agencies? Yes, this is the nature of the Israeli state, and there is a particular dimension to this. For as Isabella Ginor, the Haaretz correspondent, in the article in Haaretz on August 29, 1999, Israelis are involved in global money laundering. And she documents how this is linked to the operations of the mafia in the Soviet Union, and it has profound implications for the United States. And this will lead us into a large discussion about the role of the Mossad, along with that of the Central Intelligence Agency, in the events of September 11th. But first I want to mention that the articles and the investigative work of J. Orlin Grob regarding the National Security Agency, banking transactions and spying, and the death of Vince Foster, you may recall, are instructive in this regard, because it turns out that we're dealing here with vast money laundering into shells in the Channel Islands, the Cayman Islands, Switzerland, the Netherlands, Antilles, Liberia, and the British Virgin Islands, involving 14 secret bank accounts, drug profits used, and what are the vehicles for this? Bank Hapoalim of Chicago. And what is the cover for it? The Israeli Children's Educational Fund, billions of dollars, which go into drug smuggling and covert operations, tied as well to BCCI. And who are some of the figures involved? It takes us back to Jackson Stevens of the National Security Council. Jackson Stevens of Venice, Florida. Jackson Stevens of Mohammed Atta, Jackson Stevens of the Bush, Harkin Energy, and Arbusto, Jackson Stevens in the National Security Council, Jackson Stevens in the Mossad, Jackson Stevens and money laundering in Israel.
in talking about money laundering, the White House set up Swiss accounts in Geneva to ensure that funds would go to arming the Contras and go through Honduras and could be indirectly used for the purchase of Israeli weapons. And then one way that Israel operated throughout Latin America was it had gained fame for the development of hydroponics and other agricultural improvements. And so it set up, for instance, a melon company, you know, for the production of agricultural products. And it functioned this way in El Salvador and throughout Mexico and throughout the region. And the Mossad agents and the Israeli military advisors would pretend that they were businessmen and move around as if they were selling some of the Israeli products. Let's look at Colombia.
Maya, before we do that, I want to just...
Oh, you want to go back to Jackson Stevens?
I want to finish the point about Jackson Stevens, because as the important investigative report from which I'm quoting points out, that what was at work here was a laundry controlled by computer software, Jackson Stevens software firm Systemics, in selling a network of interlocking banking software. And it's interesting that the legal firm that was handling this, the Rose Law Firm, had its partners, Vince Foster, Webster Hubbell, and Hillary Rodham Clinton. And as I had indicated before, Jackson Stevens is deeply involved in the operations, the financial operations of the BCCI, and of the laundering of money into the oil companies of Harkin Energy and Bush. What is this oligarchy of rulers that has such a relationship to the financial system and the national security system? And the article continues. Covert agencies ran their interference. The National Security Agency imposed the Clipper chip for encrypted communications to access all private conversations in the United States. Systemics operated as a bank within a bank, operations on behalf of the National Security Agency, running secure facilities for weapons flow out of the U.S. and drugs flow in, not only at Arkansas, but at other locations in the 1990s. And MENA was the brainchild of CIA's Bill Casey, operated by the CIA pilots flying out of NSA-controlled facilities. Now, one of those NSA-controlled facilities was in Venice, Florida. And in Venice, Florida, one of their pilots, Charlie Voss, was the person with whom Mohammed Atta was living in Venice, Florida. Why did the Rose Law Firm begin shredding files upon hearing of the death of Vince Foster? What are the operations, and why is the Mossad, like the White House, the article asks, in panic mode over the reopening of an investigation into these events? Why did the operating code for a new computer developed by NSA subcontractor E-Systems of Dallas wind up in the hands of the Mossad within 1 month? And that will lead us in our next program to the four-part series by Fox on the role of the Mossad and of Israeli spies in the United States in relation to the events of September 11th, brothers and sisters. Understand the nature of the Israeli state. Understand what kind of apparatus this is. Understand at whose hands the Palestinian people are being martyred over a century. Understand why there can never be any form of self-determination or any expression of Palestinian sovereignty while a colonial settler state of this character exists even on a ship off of Haifa, as I said last week. Understand why the Jews of Israel are being placed in the role of pitting themselves against the very survival, not only of the Palestinian people, but of the Arab peoples throughout the entire region, their ability to have
a living standard worthy of the name, their ability to command their own resources, to have a settler population placed in this role is no service to them. For as Martin Luther King said, the arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice. No amount of brutality, no amount of force, and no expulsion plans will serve to subjugate an entire people and an entire nation and an entire region.
What we have in Israel, as we have in the United States, is tremendous dependence economically upon the war industry, upon the arms industry. Throughout the Israeli government owning through the Israeli Labor Party and the trade union Histadrut, owning the military apparatus, as well as having major individual financiers own large weapons companies and electronics companies in Israel, and as we stated last week, U.S. companies operating in Israel, a major sector of the Israeli working class is working in the arms industry. And as you know, it's over $100 million, the latest incursion into the West Bank, and that money will again fuel the Israeli arms industry, leading again to perhaps a recovery of the Israeli economy. We're out of time now, Ralph, and we'd like to remind you about our event at Elvira Dempsey. It's tomorrow, Saturday, April 13th, 127 West 127th Street near Malcolm X Boulevard. It starts at 6 p.m. And also that you can reach us at Veritas9, that's V-E-R-I-T-A-S-9, at PacBell.net. And at Veritas Press, P.O. Box 6345, Vallejo, V-A-L-L-E-J-O, California 94591. It's amazing how the 2 hours just fly by, and we still have more to say about the role of the Mossad and the Israeli arms industry in Latin America, in Iran, and in other places of the world, and the role of the Mossad in the events of 9/11.
And we mean to say it to you with documentation and with precision. We will be doing it on Saturday. We will be doing it again next Friday. Join us, brothers and sisters, on Taking Aim.
It's 11:58 in the morning, and you are tuned to listener-sponsored, commercial-free community radio WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM. That was Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen.